We're on, Amy?
Ready to, you are live.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the March 2nd, 2022 EDA Board meeting. I'd like to call the meeting in order. I'm going to ask Randy to do a roll call for our board members.
Thank you. Commissioner Sandy? I'm here. Ms. McKinnon?
Here.
Mr. Kendi?
Here.
Mr. Spogel?
Here.
Mr. Ellich?
Here.
Mr. Binglemore?
Here.
Chair Pruitt?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And for the record, we'd like to welcome our newest board member, Mr. Ellich. So if you would say a few words about your background.
Thank you, Chair. Ray Dillage, been here since January 20th, 1982, proud Alaskan, love it here. It's been a passion of mine even before I came. Spent a lot of time in the oil field up north and down in the inlet production drilling activities, as well as power generation, so have a little bit of tools in my toolbox in that arena. Looking forward to this opportunity and serve to the state of Alaska, giving back to it some of the things that it has blessed me with. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Next up on the agenda is item number 4, prior minutes for January 27th, 2022. Motion on the floor, please.
This is Bill Kendry.
I missed number 3 agenda approval.
This is Bill Kendry. I move to approve the agenda as presented.
This is Albert. I'll second. Is there any objections to the agenda as presented? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. That brings us to prior minutes for January 27, 2022.
This is Bill. I move to approve the prior minutes from January 27, 2022 as presented.
This is Albert. I'll second. Thank you. Does anybody have any corrections, deletions, clarifications for our minutes for the 27th? Is there any objections to adopting those minutes? Seeing none, those minutes are adopted. Bring us to item number 5, public comments. I ask the participants to please limit your comments to 2 minutes. And we'd like to make sure we have your name and any affiliation on the record. And with that, we will start in the boardroom. Anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? I do not see anybody. Randy, is there anybody online wishing to make a public comment?
There is, Chair. If there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Well, morning, Ada Board. I'm Rick Quitbeck, Alaska State Director with Power of the Future. Fun start out the month. I say morning instead of good morning because of where we are as a nation today versus where we were last January 19th before Joe Biden began to bungle and demolish America's place on the world stage. Think back 13 and a half months ago. America was energy independent, a net exporter of oil, and inoculated from geopolitical tyranny. Alaska is just the Anwar's coastal plain's first plan to still go through, with ADO leading the way in investing in our state's and nation's future. The Anwar Access Road is sitting with the scientifically based and thoroughly evaluated clean FEIS and record of decision. The Loma project on target to deliver significant oil to cap within a couple of years. Oh, and gas? It was $1.30 per gallon cheaper than today, according to AAA. Our state's energy future was still bright. Even the darkest sunglasses let the gate glare through as though we were peering through clear lenses. But then the eco left got its claws into our federal government, placing in leadership positions men and women who hate traditional energy, who see the boogeyman as existential threat around every corner, and who worship at the altar of the cult of climate change. Those folks have led the fight against our state's resource-based economy with over 20 executive and administrative orders issued against Alaska's projects and prospects, adding activist judges and their mind-boggling decisions, and Alaskans been hit broadside time after time. but still in a year fight. And sensible Alaskans across this great state, thank you for doing so, for continuing to skirmish against the radical green scheme. Because in the end, if they win, America, and especially Alaska, lose. Which is why you must continue the battle, blocking out the dribble from the extreme environmental fringe, and do what I do daily, point out their flagrant anti-American agenda, their blatant hypocrisy, and their lunacy-driven actions. When we win, and we will, you can say to them, you're cracking welcome for our efforts. Fight on, Ada, and thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
If there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Hi, good morning. My name is J.C. Wood from the law firm Dillon & Fidley, and we represent former Brooks Range Petroleum Corporation employees Dan Gleason, Jack Lash, and Larry Bendel. And we understand that you will be discussing matters related to Mustang Holding LLC during the executive session this morning. My comments are directed toward that agenda item. And we submitted detailed written comments yesterday and respectfully request that you review and consider the comments during your discussion in the executive session this morning. So Mr. Gleason, Mr. Lash, and Mr. Bendel worked for months between November 2019 and April 2020 without a paycheck from Brooks Range. And that's despite the statutory obligation to pay these wages, Brooks Range has not yet done so. Now, our clients filed statutory liens to secure the right to payment of their back wages and then filed late foreclosure lawsuits following the process required by law. And the legislature, by statute, has given priority to payment of back wages by giving a wage lien, such as those held by Mr. Gleason, Mr. Lash, and Mr. Bendel, a first lien status. Now, our clients have refrained from actively pursuing their lawsuits in the hope that ADA will give effect to the legislature's intent and require payment of their back wages in connection with any sale of Mustang Holding assets, making court action in this matter unnecessary and moot. And importantly, Dan, Jack, and Larry have a great deal of institutional knowledge regarding the Mustang project, which could be a huge benefit to a new operator going forward. And they're willing to consider working for a new operator, which would assist in bringing the project to production in a timely manner, but their back wages should be paid as required by law. And we ask that you recognize their priority for payment in your consideration during the executive session, and thank you for your time and consideration of our comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else online? Go ahead.
Good morning again. It's Ken Kashner. I'm from Homer. And there were a couple of things I wanted to talk about. I'll lead off with the executive session that you're going to have today. I first became involved with AEA and ADA on September 16, 2020. And since that time, you have had 10, and this will be the 11th, executive sessions that address the Ambler Access Project and the Mustang Holdings each 10 times prior. It seems like, and the other thing, since that time when I first became engaged, you've managed to spend about 65% of your time in the executive session. I want to address the procedural things that you've been doing. Both the Open Meetings Act and your own bylaws require you to take a roll call vote. At the end of the last meeting, you accepted a motion from concerning the changes to the investment policy without a second and without a vote, and you just declared it. And continuing to executive session, you didn't take a roll call vote either. And both of them are probably picking on procedural things to you, but again, when you go back to the record, these things call into question the validity of what it is that you're doing and your intention to follow the law. So with that, thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any, is there anybody else?
There are no other public members on the line. Check
thank you. Alan, do you have a comment?
The only thing I want to mention, Chair, and thank you for that, is the caller that was mentioning about with the Brooks Range Petroleum employees, to please resend the documents that you made reference to. We received his public comment, but we did not receive the attached documents. And I've been requesting that you resend those.
All right. Well, thank you. All right. Nobody else is online, Amy, for public comments? All right. So I will close the public comment session. That brings us up to item number six, new business. A presentation, AK SHIP program. Alan?
Chair, board members, we have a presentation before you, and I'd like to ask Morgan Neff, our Chief Investment Officer, to also join me at the table. The Alaska SHIP Home Porting for Improvements program was put in place originally in January or June of 2019 under a pilot program. We created a three-year time window for it, a maximum level of $10 million being available under our Alaska Statutes 4488-172, or our economic development account. So the sunset date for that initial program is coming up in June of this year. So we wanted to initiate an initial presentation, just updating where we're at with that program, the benefits that are coming from it, and also raising some suggestions that we would like to receive board comment on about how we take the program forward if possible. So with that, I'd ask if Morgan Neff, if you would run through the presentation, please.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Sharon Cruz, board members, board member Ellis. Nice to have you. Look forward to speaking with you more. Building what Executive Director Weissman's comments, I'd like to move over to slide number two real quick. Can you put this in slide four? There we go. This is just a reminder page that AVA has been investing in Alaska since 1967 as a development finance authority, and is a financially sustainable corporation of the state, and that the revenues that we generate are distributed in two ways. One, back into the projects and programs that are under our statutory and regulatory department, and also back into the state through dividends, which to date, $446 million has been declared, and we've generated or collected over $3.5 billion into economic development activities into Alaska while creating a substantial amount of tangible economic benefit for all communities. So those are online, moving to page three. And by the way, the presentation is online, embedded in the agenda of today's meeting. The Alaska SHIP Home Porting for Improvement program was designed and instituted in 2019, and it was helped make Alaska shipyards more competitive while keeping the work and employment within the state. Additionally, the program offers short-term financing and bridge financing at competitive rates with flexible terms that are used for repair, conversion, and maintenance work on commercial and industrial vessels at Alaska shipyards. This is incredibly important because this type of capital expense is extremely capital intensive and is usually required by the operator to fund out of their own liquidity, which at times is very volatile due to the seasonality of the revenue stream. There is a gap in this type of financing as well due to the traditional financing that's offered by banks, as they typically sit within the purchase of the vessel within a first mortgage collateral position. A brief overview on page four of the SHIP, AK SHIP program, was originally rolled out through Resolution U1915 and U1915A. And as Mr. Weissman said, under 4488-172. The elements today are $150,000 to a $1.5 million loan, which has been determined by the authority. Each deal and each term of the notes are uniquely identified based on the underwriting. The terms can range from 6 to 24 months, and then the payments can be adjusted based on the seasonality of the revenue stream from 3 to 12 months of interest only, and then the interest rate can be based off a fixed or variable rate based on the spread, but no less than a minimum of 5% per year, and then our fees are directly defined through regulatory provisions. As we move on to page 5, the underwriting criteria for this program is stringent. Each borrower and guarantor must provide 3 years for the financial statements. The operation must satisfy a minimum of a 1.25 debt service coverage ratio. And the loan to value on the actual vessel must not exceed 75% when including the HA ship financing that's being proposed. And then the borrower and guarantor must maintain a minimum of 10% tangible balance sheet equity after the funding of the facility. And lastly, most important, the ship repair contract must be done in Alaska and not subcontracted to anyone or any entity outside of Alaska. And of course, the structural feature of this is that the ship contract, ship repair contract, is that the funds are paid directly to the shipyard operator and solely utilized to purchase the final invoice of the repairs and the assignment of the operator's rights to payment under the ship contract. Additionally, the borrowing operator must certify that the final invoice is lien of any free of duties, taxes, and rights or set-off to dispute, and then the borrower remains liable for the repayment of the obligation, while the operator of the shipyard remains liable for any warranty work that may come out of those repairs, indemnifying Ada and its other co-lenders. And this is done through the remaining terms of the financing. Six. Outlines two loans that we've made under this program, which has been very successful, and then one that is currently in the process of final documentation and closing. The two that we have previously lived on are for Marine Vessel Wilderness Adventure and the barge Kotzebue Sound, which were both built to, I believe, in 2019 and have since been repaid in 2021. And then we are working on final close and documentations for the Marine Vessel Kayak. As we move forward and come to the sunset of the program, we want to discuss and have the board consider the extension of this program as a permanent loan program allocation under 4488172. We think that the extension of this program to include all facilities or fabricators that provide any type of vessel fabrication, modification, or repairs to non-traditional shipyards, it would be a nice additive due to the amount of work that would be needed on some of the higher quality, smaller ships that aren't able to go into the larger shipyards. We'd like to reduce the loan amount from $150,000 to $50,000 in order to help facilitate that work on smaller vessels on the non-traditional shipyards. And then as we look to identify the non-traditional shipyards, as I discussed above, they would have to go through a stringent due diligence and underwriting program similar to if they were an applicant under 4488172 for a loan. With that, I'd like to open it up for any questions or concerns at the board this time.
If I may just provide a little more background for the presentation. Thank you very much, Morgan, for walking through that. When we established the pilot program initially, it was based upon really looking at what other type of programs were available within the region. So we're looking at the Puget Sound and the numerous shipyards and the benefits that the shipyards provide for this type of service. But we also looked at financing programs that were in place and saw that Canada, through its development bank, effectively EDC, provides financing to shipyards for shipbuilding and for ship cycle repair work. So this program was really put forward to put Alaska on a level playing field. And it was expanding what we have traditionally done in NATO. So we looked at, through our project development, project finance, or development finance program, which is what the Ketchikan Shipyard, Alaska Shipyard, Dry Dock Shipyard sits under in our portfolio of projects under management. We looked at ways that we can really utilize the economic development account to provide additional financing for those types of projects, and this was one of the programs that really came from it, again, to level the playing field for Alaska companies. We still get a lot of requests that are coming through. We're looking at information at this point from different parties that have expressed an interest, which is what is driving identifying ways of expanding the program to make it more usable for a larger section of the Alaska marine sector. It starts principally with understanding the shipyard activities. That's why it started with Alaska Ship and Dry Dock. It expanded to JAG, Alaska's operations in Seward. We're looking at expanding it to broader shipyard activity within the state.
Yeah, there's approximately a dozen fabricators now. Again, we have not quantified or qualified those through an underwriting process, but this is driven by inbound requests for vessel and ship repair that can't necessarily go to one of the larger ones, or it's cost prohibitive. So that's why we're asking to consider the lower amount as well as including non-traditional shipyards in the program.
Okay, so I've got a bunch of questions, board members. Alright, so first question is, the loans that you've made versus the cost of reorganization, is it profitable?
The
amount of time you put in versus what you made, two loans?
We've made three loans.
Three loans, okay. So the revenue that the organization has made, the interest versus the cost to put the three loans together, is the bottom line black or red?
It's marginally black, so profitable, but it needs higher volume.
So when you say marginally?
Yeah, but it was because the initial cost in establishing the loan documentation, which we now have put in place, and the initial cost of ultimately going through the process of, in one case we have a first lien, and in other cases we have a second lien, so registering those liens and getting that document to the Coast Guard. The initial costs of it were higher, ultimately putting the program in place, but with more activity, we will remain in a larger portion of the black.
So how do you then go from a loan of $150,000, which typically will take the vessel appraisal and all the paperwork with the Coast Guard and whatnot, and then come to the conclusion that a $50,000 loan would be economically viable?
Because the causes, Mr. Weichert said, have already been embedded on the front end, and the documentation of the work on the subsequent...
The cost for appraisal?
We don't pay that.
I know, what I'm saying is the vessel owner will have to... Someone's got to pay for appraisal. They're not free. It's at least 10% of the loan, plus fees. I don't know... And the other thing that might raise the question is, are we competing out with the banks when we get down to $50,000?
No, the banks typically don't play in the repair and conversion market because they're typically sitting in the first lien mortgage
asset market. And so if the boat has equity in it, the borrower can go refinance the boat to pay for the upgrades. So again, as this organization, you know, with the Bankers Association, as we know, you know, they get a little interested when we start to venture into their business. This is direct loans to consumers, not to the banks. So my question is, and going down $50,000, and to smaller shipyards, okay, I don't think we should prejudice ourselves of where the shipyard is, as long as it's in Alaska. But I do question how a $50,000 loan under the organization that's as lean as mean as this can keep its head above water as far as the program being able to make a return for its investors, which is the residents of the state of Alaska, 50,000. That's a question I have. The other question I have is loan to value is 75%. Okay, that's based on a generated appraisal. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So you've had three loans, and you've had to modify one.
Yes.
Right. And that modification is scheduled to mature this month, or last month.
No, it's already paid off. It paid off earlier than the modification.
Okay. So we extended maturity to March 2021, but it's already paid off.
It is formed of all the terms that we did with the modification. In fact, we actually have an update on that in the presentation that's following about the COVID-19 impact.
So what I would like to see is, I'd like to see the generation of cost versus reward in the program so far, like to see a detailed analysis of how the organization actually can see in the black on a $50,000 loan, what the due diligence that we need to do. I do not, my personal opinion, my comment is I do not want to get into the banking business. I don't want to have a bunch of loan officers running around making loans to small businesses. That's not our mission. So those are my comments as far as it. I like the program on a volume basis, but you start getting down into the small, into what I call small stuff, and, you know, competing against credit unions, local banks, and whatnot for a $50,000 vessel loan, to me is a challenge. And I'll say that. I'll look for the numbers to make a decision on that.
And Chair, I want to register the fact that your concerns, we will certainly follow up right on the information that you're looking for, and this is the purpose of this presentation, to get that type of feedback. It is not the intention of the program to compete in any way with Alaska financial institutions, and we will follow up on that directly with them about that, on that element of the program.
And I don't know, I'm not a boat guy. I would also like to know, typically, if we had to go, please possess a boat, what the typical charges are, what it really costs, what the industry really has to pay, what it's, you know, I have no idea. I know you're possessing a car is one thing, but I have no idea about a boat, dockage and storage and insurance and all that. So that's, anyway, those are my concerns.
Well, thanks very much, to Alan, the team. I love this program. And I use this a lot as the example of sort of how Ada is able to be nimble and really think on its feet in terms of solving problems facing Alaskans and Alaskan businesses, and also trying to capture the challenge here was, why are we bleeding jobs and money out of the state? Why are they going to Washington to have the repairs done when we have a state-of-the-art shipyard or yards in Alaska? And so that was really the question that was asked. And then I thought this was a great example of how well you were able to be creative and did a lot of research, like with Canada, figuring out what they did. But Alan, can you refresh my memory? I know we met with bankers together in Ketchikan when you were trying to come up with the terms and solve this problem, which I think this program does, and I also acknowledge that the cost was on the front end in implementing it to hopefully the volume that we'll see on the back end. But can you refresh my memory on what the banker's response was and why they wouldn't do this kind of financing?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. We did have actually direct feedback with the presentation of the initial program from two bankers that were currently in our meeting at this time on a different matter. And the feedback that we received in the meeting was that this was not financing that banks in Alaska would be approaching. Because as Mr. Knapp had highlighted, they're principally focused on a first lien, the initial, you know, a full mortgage of an operating ship. They're not looking to finance based upon the vessel appraisal any type of cycle work. That's usually working capital that the company that owns the vessel needs to ultimately spend themselves, or they'll have a general line of credit that ultimately covers that. So when we talked at that point on following up with the different banks, the feedback we really got was for a second position, which we're principally talking about, to really bring that cycle work here to Alaska, they aren't competing in that side of it. And that's why we structured it, that the program ultimately that size to support the cycle work here in Alaska. Now, incidentally, what our duty identifies is that one of the vessels that we did finance was for Drake Investments or Drake, you know, Constructors, which is operates in the Cozumel area for a barge. And they came to the program financing because of the terms that we were supporting the local shipyard. And in that case, we did get a first lien position on it because they were not able to get direct financing of the bars itself. So there's a secondary function that's within the program when local financial institutions aren't actually picking up the first lien position on the boat.
Thank you.
So Alan, would you say that vessel financing is risky business?
I would absolutely agree with you, Chair, that is risky. We need to be very cautious on the terms that we've been establishing for the program.
So what kind of rates are we charging?
That was identified when we established the program at a floor rate of 5%, because that was viewed to be the limit on a really well-qualified borrower in this case, and also the qualifications.
What would the banks charge the borrower on something other than a boat?
Well, they focus on a first lien mortgage. Those rates have been on the line of 5.5% up to 6%.
Okay. And so my recollection is one of the main reasons why I supported this program, just for new board members, is that what was happening is the larger ships were going south and the big shipyards were actually financing the repairs themselves. And so there's an incentive for ships to go to Seattle or to Canada because they could get financing and they could not get it in Alaska. And I say that, that's the larger ships. So it was an incentive for us to figure out a way how to mitigate that, I guess, carrot that they would throw out these larger ships to go things. So that's now kind of morphed into the smaller, vessels that would never go south to begin with, for $50,000 of repairs, because it cost them $50,000 to get down there and back. So I just, for the board members, I mean, that was the original, for me, that was the original intent, was to have some sort of a compensation, or I guess an option for a ladder of ships, not to go south when a shipyard would finance a typically a large repair, like $1.5 million barge. That would be something like that.
Sir, what you're saying is absolutely correct. That is the initial format that we set up the program, was to levelize the playing field within the region for Alaska shipyards. And it is exactly the case we highlighted, that several shipyards in the Puget Sound area provide account receivable finance, basically. They'll carry this for a certain period of time, but they won't do it for 2 years. They'll carry it for 3 months, 6 months. The other particular issue that we identified with it is the seasonality of the revenue base that the marine vessels are being utilized. So there's flexibility that we've identified for the program, but also try to pull that work to be done under Alaska Shipyard. So it's not solely the accounts receivable financing that those projects, that those shipyards do, which is what I have to identify. Higher than the 5.5-6% first lien mortgage a financial institution would provide, it's to extend out and be able to work with the seasonality that, the barge, the marine vessel for Northern Marine that we're talking about, the seasonality of Alaska work and revenues.
Any questions from the board? Ben?
Thank you, Chair. Curiosity, the marine industry in my area expertise, but I'm curious if there's any distinction between ownership by Alaskans as opposed to people in the lower 48 that would use this financing. Thank you, Chairman.
But what is driving it is that the work occurs at an Alaska shipyard. So as long as if someone from take an operation that has multiple areas, of owning vessels, or maybe have their own fabrication vessels, but have something operating in Alaska waters, in order for them not to go back to, in this case, they want the different party going to Louisiana, or ultimately then heading it to a related shipyard in the Puget Sound, that they would have the work done here in Alaska shipyards. So that's what we're looking to finance ultimately. If it's a low 48 company with that type of vessel activity in Alaska waters, to us it makes sense you have the work done here as you do the home porting in Alaska.
Bill?
So the volume in this program is obviously getting pretty low, 3 years, 3 months. Did we miss the mark in some way? Is volume been down for some reason? What would you expect the current program moving forward to do?
I would maintain that COVID-19 had a bit of an impact on it. The initial loans that we set up with Uncruise actually was for multiple vessels. and there were limitations that were in place with docking facilities that were available within Ketchikan for them to ultimately perform all the work that was undertaken. So there's other limitations that we're currently really working with where the shipyards are at and how that can facilitate it. What I would point out, Mr. Biblemore, is that the interest that we've received on the program is fairly high. It's not, we're not looking at increasing the allocation at this point in time of $10 million based upon the interest that's coming through. But from parties like Drake Investments, parties like Northern Marine, being identified having access to the program wasn't the initial setup for it. It shows that there's additional interest that ultimately is coming in. So I would agree, this is low volume initially. Cost has been raised as an issue, meaning the interest rate that we're charging, the minimum interest rate's been charging on it. The financial requirements has also been raised as an issue, to be very frank, about 3 years worth of financial statements that are in place. So we're looking to maintain the underwriting standards that we have for it for the long term place, because agreeing, as the chair has highlighted, there's risk certainly within the marine sector. But trying to expand it, at least as the idea here, is to expand it to make it more accessible by parties that have expressed interest in the program.
So just like Chairman said, I am supportive of this program from its original intent. I'm a little wary of reducing the lower amount down to $50,000. I don't want to get into the little boat ships that need repair that can get financing elsewhere. My question is really centered around our true cost of capital, and wanted to know is this 5% or 5.5% interest rate, is that our cost of capital plus a percent for some type of profit?
That's that, through the chair, Board Member Coble, that is exactly the case. So when we established the floor, we were looking at our general investment or cost of capital level at about 3.5 and established a minimum 1.5 spread on there. So there's the relationship and the treasury's actually increased. And this is one thing that is not exactly present in our regulations for some other programs, but it is available in the way we're able to price under 4488.72, is if there is an increase in treasury rates, so as generally interest rates are rising, which then would mean, in this case, our cost of capital is increasing, that we're able to continue to benchmark that, but we do establish a minimum floor for the program.
If I can add one thing, the interest rate sensitivity is also greatly diminished because of the short tenure of the terms that are offered through this program, which are between 6 and 24 months. So if we're going through a fixed pricing program, it's not that we're out there for 15 or 20 years. It's for a very finite period of time and duration.
So it looks to me like there's the bigger shipyards, which is basically Ketchikan's sewer, there's a barrier of entry based on a lot of dollars. They're not going to take small boats. Okay? And so the risk here to me is that you're going to end up with small boat workers in Gillingham, King Salmon, Craig, Kauak, Huna, wherever. Where all these boats are to get worked on by smaller shops. I mean, that's the result. My question is actually maybe towards the Commerce, our Commissioner here. Doesn't the Department of Commerce have a program already in place to be able to facilitate what I would call these smaller loans? And she's new, so she can get back to us, or at least back to you, Ellen. That what I would call smaller businesses, whether it's shipping or trucking or whatever, to facilitate something like this.
Thank you, Chairman Cruz. I appreciate the question, and I'm looking forward to getting back to you with that.
Boys, looks good still. Anyway, I just asked that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Board Member McKinnon here. Morgan, can you talk to us about what is happening to the funds that are currently allocated to this program when they're not being utilized? So even in short-term capital investments or long-term capital investments, so that we understand the trade-off between more incremental loans that are smaller to increase volume versus having these particular dollars tied up in investments to be able to fit for other projects.
Board Member McKinnon, the funds that are used for this program are coming out of 4488-172 and are used for a variety of projects and opportunities. So when they're not being used, they're being deployed either through other investments or projects, you know, on a short-term or long-term basis. But that's why we're also wanting to look at potentially increasing the volume here, because the program did suffer the initial stages of COVID and hadn't had a chance to really spread its wings and fly, so to speak, because of the opportunities that are available within the fabrication, repair, and conversion line.
Thank you for those comments. Mr. Chairman, I would say that for the time that I've been here, that boats are risky business, and it is expensive to appraise them. But I do understand that the borrower would carry the brunt of those costs. I am concerned that now we would go forward and that we would have expertise to approve a shipyard, and that we would know whether it's geographically diverse into smaller communities or not, the cost associated with certifying a shipyard or the repair person to build that. That's one of the new components, is that right, Morgan, that we would certify a shipyard?
I would say we would certify, we would underwrite them as a standalone business, look at their longevity, look at their history as operating as a fabricator or a repair workshop within that non-traditional shipyard framework.
And if I could provide a little more background, when the pilot program was initially in place, that was a request from the board that we evaluate, you know, the shipyard. And so what we've done procedurally is, to the extent that we have a new shipyard, and this was done the last time at Jag Sewer, is that we present the shipyard as well before the first loan, and it's done concurrently.
Mr. Chairman, Board Member McKinnon, again, I appreciate those comments. I hope seeing recovery in Alaska's economy from the struggles that our borrowers have had, as well as Alaskans and communities in general. I'm just a little gun-shy about changing the terms when we don't really know what this program can do. I look to staff to provide additional information, but like you, I will be interested in hearing from the banks, credit unions, or other lenders to understand if they believe this is direct competition with something that they're doing. But in general, the comment I'd like to leave you with is, boats are a risky business, and they corrode, or the maintenance is ongoing. You can't sit with a piece of metal. It just doesn't stop. Yeah, it always needs maintenance. Thank you.
Which you know, I will say helps shipyards, because that's business for them. So, Bill?
One question, we talked about borrower's cost, appraisals being one of them, and whatever else that it may be. Can those costs be financed back into the loan, or are they directly out of their pocket?
The appraisal fee is directly out of their pocket. So it's an upfront cost. The appraisal itself is part of the whole cycle work that's being done, because ultimately the Coast Guard is looking at recertifying the vessels for a period of time. So it is an operating cost that the vessel owner has anyway. They're doing the additional work at this point in time at a shipyard to bring it up to a point to be able to be certified by the Coast Guard. And so we're using that appraisal at that point in time to look at doing financing for that cycle work to help facilitate, you know, the full operating costs and seasonality revenues for the vessel owner.
I understand that. I just want to understand the difference between out-of-pocket cost and what was being financed, you know, if they got reimbursed for its finance in the loan.
So what you're just tell me, Alan, if I had a, or we'll say a newest board member, and he had a 100-foot lot, he'd be powered sitting in Seward. He gives it to Seward, he gives it to the facility down there to get repowered. It's already a certified vessel. It runs fine, but Manny decides he wants to put, more efficient, higher power motors in there, and it's going to cost $500,000. We would entertain loaning that. Coast Guard didn't have to recertify it, they can repower it.
With the example chair that you highlighted for Zerlage, in that case, as it will come to us, we would look at financing that. Any party that is looking at repowering a facility at Alaska Shipyard, Shipyard Board, we would look at financing that.
However, Coast Guard isn't required. That's what I'm getting at. Coast Guard is not required in the loan.
It's not required if the appraisal ultimately doesn't require it. I really was highlighting the fact that it's traditional with the cycle work we're looking at the marine vessels, that it's concurrent.
Well, there's a difference between commercial and private. And the Coast Guard has completely, just like aircraft, completely different set of regulations and scrutiny and requirements for reporting between a commercial vessel and a private vessel. And quite frankly, how if you go buy a barge from Taiwan or North Korea, actually, and bring it in and just use it for his whole own purpose and put his own freight on it and really doesn't have to deal with the Coast Guard. But yet he can go to the shipyard and work there. But as soon as he wants to put your freight on that barge, it's a whole different set of rules. So I just want to make sure we're clear on what your intent is, on who's available to take advantage, whether it's out of this configuration or a different configuration if we were left to continue on with the program.
Our history in the program so far has been based on recertification from the Coast Guard and the work that's been done at the shipyards.
We're going to have a next board meeting on Randy's job then.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry. Any further questions? All right. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate the feedback. Obviously, we're going to be taking back the comments from the board and working on ultimately how we put together a proposal, but we would then look at presenting, once we have that full information, being able to present a proposal to the board with resolution on the program.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, board.
Thank you, Morgan. Okay, now we've got the data COVID response for Alaska.
Yeah. Chairman, board members, this is a presentation that we have put together related to data's response to COVID-19 and the programs that we put in place. This is following a request from the board to get a full presentation on what activities we undertook, what parties ultimately within ADA's mission have benefited. And so if you're open to this, I would like to proceed with the presentation. And this is also attached on the linked agenda for the public, and we'll highlight the different page numbers that we have going through this so everyone's aware of what we're looking at. So again, the first page, and this is the page of slide number 2, is our general statement ultimately on ADA, our mission, what we've achieved. I won't go through this with another word in depth, but in the previous presentation, I've given some highlights on this. So if anyone has any particular questions on what our overall mission is, where our funding goes through, we can address this. So principally with the COVID-19 response, the biggest program that ADA put in place in working with the Department of Commerce, and also with the General Economic Development Council, as well as Credit Union 1, is the AK CARES program. So this was put in place and authorized by ADA's board in 2020, actually May of 2020, to establish the AK CARES program through the governor's appropriation and delegation of about $290 million to small business relief, which was then approved through an RPL process by the legislature. So ultimately with this program, we were able to benefit 5,750 small businesses within the state of Alaska, distributing $282 million in funding. Now this program principally was tailored after the DPP program.
And when the PPP program, which was initiated by the Small Business Administration, initially came out, and this was also in the time period about May itself, there was a lot of concern that a lot of Alaska businesses were not going to have access to the P3 program. And therefore, the state was looking at really establishing a grant program or a funding program for these small businesses. We had initiated this through a emergency regulations, which was authorized through the governor's emergency notice and statement for the full state. We established a loan and guarantee program initially. This was then converted into a grant program following feedback from the legislature, specifically the LBNA, on the proposed RPNL. So this is the program we put in place, again, benefiting well over 5,700 businesses, small businesses in the state, at a point in time when there was significant concern that these businesses would have any access to any type of federal funding. Now, of course, in looking retrospectively, there were a lot of changes to the PPP program, additional funding that was put in place, but there was a key service that was provided by this. One of the things that I would also highlight is that ADA has prepared, and you should have provided it for your packets, a fact sheet that ADA has put together. And on this, we identified that, you know, we've received quite a few comments from recipients of the grant program. And thanks to ADA, DCCD, the governor, the legislature for putting this program in place. But the fact sheet that we've highlighted does point out three specific parties in their comments about support for the program, and thanks to everyone ultimately in initiating this. So with the AK Cares grant program, what we want to highlight too is how this has impacted across the benefit of small businesses across the state. So the slide 4 shows a map by legislative district on the benefits that have come to Alaska small businesses. The other program that we put in place with the board's authorization was converting something that has existed in statutes since 2010, which was a export and small business guarantee program. So under 4488-500, under that program, we have the ability to provide up to $1 million worth of a guarantee that supported working capital. We, under those same emergency provisions, we converted that program during the time period of the emergency notice from the governor, converted that program into an emergency $1 million guarantee program, working with Alaska's financial institutions to provide an additional $1 million guarantee to existing loan facilities to be able to expand their access to working capital. Now, one of the things is on there, we have benefited and supported about 800 jobs just through that program. And really what I want to highlight is that it didn't take a large amount of additional capital for us to do that. But it took $6.3 million in funds that was on top of existing loan facilities to those businesses that impacted 800 jobs at that point in time. One of the particular ones that I would like to highlight is a coach service that was that came to us for $1 million guarantee, which was recently sold to, or has announced for sale, to Unitotum and Doyon in a joint venture. That party came to us at a point in time when they really were looking at no tourism activity, having to carry in personnel, staff, storage of the coach service over that period of time. So we're able to provide stability to that business for it to be able to be in a position of gaining value in that acquisition that's coming from Minnesota and going on as they move on with those coach services within the state. So it's a fundamental key element of the program. The other party that we've identified, which is on slide 5, is the blood bank. So ADA put in place a $1 million guarantee working with FNBA, where we were able to advance some additional funds to them. We received a letter very graciously from the CEO of the Blood Bank and their board thanking all of you for the efforts that were undertaken and its impact, as they highlight major role in saving thousands of Alaskan lives by providing that additional facility. So So the Alaska, we're just talking about the Alaska Ship Home Porting for Improvements, or as I'd like to continue to refer to as AK Ship. In this case, that was the initial financing that they would ask about on another cruise. They requested modifications to the fact of the tourism shutdown that occurred through initially the CDC and then actions by Canada in closing their borders and linking in ultimately tourist activity within the state. So we were able to, through being patient capital, working directly with them and their staff, and I like the statement here on slide 6 from Dan Blanchard, the CEO. We were able to fully help them during this time period, defer principal obligations, it carried interest. We saw that a period of time they were able to actually have tourism occur and have some cruise ship activity in the early part of 2021, which enabled them to fully fulfill the modification requirements actually earlier than we had extended, than the board had approved us of being allowing to extend. And it's been a very successful facility with them. And so, again, if we have some very gracious comments coming from them on the activities we made and supporting their business. Then the other thing I would like to highlight is through the focus of the board on all of the activity that we have with vendors, with our contractors, one of the key areas is the engagement with contractors as we initiated the Amber Access feasibility and final permitting activities. This is principally focusing on the 2021 fuel season. So the board engaged with us looking at ways that we can enhance and expand contractor involvement. So we defined ultimately a professional service of procurement policy that created principles that were agreed between ADA, again, as authorized by his board, and with full input ultimately coming from board members, that then we worked together with Amber Metals under our development agreement and jointly came together on this procurement policy that expanded what was initially a very limited scope of contractors, which were doing the initial permitting work, to more than 30 contractors, Alaskan businesses working with us initially in the 2021 fuel season, but they've been contracted through 2024 when we're looking at the final end to that permitting activity and be able to engage in construction of the road, again, assuming permitting is in place, assuming final feasibility is achieved. Inherent within that program, also driven by the board, is a minority business enterprise program. And with that, what we've been able to identify is that different components of the contracting, we gave increased competitive advantage to parties being able to identify minority, defined minority business enterprises, working either as top-tier vendors or subcontractors within the proposals from the lead contractors that have now represent at least 30% of our contracts that we're pursuing under the Amber Access Project. What I really want to identify is the activity that the board authorized and that in working with Amber Metals we were able to put in place far exceeds any other type of minority business enterprise program initiated by the state previously. Normally this is undertaken through federal programs where a 5% level is defined for disadvantaged business enterprises. We've been able to move the bar substantially with professional services. We're also looking ultimately with any activity on the Amber Access Project or other projects, looking to see how we can continue with those efforts. Loan modifications, that has been a significant area of involvement of AIDA's staff and AIDA's board time. In working really from the initiation of the COVID impact in March of 2020 through all of fiscal year 2020 to all of fiscal year 2021 and ongoing, as you're aware, we have at this point in time 6 existing modifications that we are monitoring. And we'll have a chance to talk a little bit more about those particular parties, ultimately with the stress, loan stress analysis. In this case, what we really want to highlight is through the efforts of the board in identifying ourselves as patient capital, looking to support these businesses in the biggest time of need with the impact of COVID-19. We modified 115 loans under our program. There were 95 unique loans that were modified, but ultimately 115 total loans that were modified, so there was some repeat modifications that would have needed to occur. predominantly within Alaska's tourism sector, but also within our oil and gas and recreation sectors. Total amount of $243 million in loans was impacted. That's out of a portfolio of roughly $470 million. So it's a significant amount of our portfolio that was impacted by these modifications. And again, I really want to highlight there was a significant amount of board time contribution in reviewing these specific modifications, getting approvals ultimately for us to be able to work with financial institutions and provide that patient capital to these borrowers in need.
Yeah, I'd like to shout out to Albert, Anna, and Julie for that spending their time to do that. We appreciate that.
And board, it's ongoing, but I'm going to highlight through the budget not a subcommittee and reviews. So that is the presentation that we wanted to provide on our COVID-19 impact, and again, highlight the fact sheet that we're looking to identify and distribute on these efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alan, thank you for the information. Very informative. I was looking at the largest pot, if you will, or bucket on page 3 of the emergency program, and I noticed that farming, fishing, and hunting is the largest segment at 29.84%, so I was wondering if you have each one of those percentages broken out, as in farming, what that percentage is, and so forth. Thank you.
Good Chairman, sir, we can provide that information. We have a full detail or a larger breakdown on the industry sectors. What I would highlight is that a large portion are commercial fishing. So having commercial fishing licenses within the state was one area that was identified in a later modification of the grant program to allow those parties to have access. They were not receiving value for their licenses under the P3 program and some other emergency programs that were put in place by the Small Business Administration. So that was a modification that was put in place for the AK CARES grant program to benefit those parties.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Alan, in answer to the chairman's question, DED does loan on the commercial fishing vessels.
And that is actually through two of the small business loan programs that are under AIDA statute that we work directly with staff at DCED. Jim Anderson's the economic development group that he actually administers those two programs.
Any further questions? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Board Member McKinnon. Alan, as a follow-up question, when we look at the portfolio and we look at how many loan modifications need to be made, by industry, do we have a percentage that's outlined for those loans that were inside of those those industry groups? Do we have a percentage that needed loan modifications?
Sorry, by industry sector, you need to bring up the modifications?
Yeah, at a high level. We certainly don't want to talk about any individual companies. But we have said it before that tourism was heavily impacted by the cruise ships basically shutting down for 2 full seasons. And so for inside of our portfolio, those might have been more heavily impacted by loan modifications or not. But do we have a percentage by industry on loan modifications, or are we not going there just to protect the general public?
For the chair board member, we have the data. I do not have it at hand to tell you the general allocations of that, but I can certainly follow up with you and the board to provide that information.
I don't need a follow-up. I would prefer you not to have to go track down those numbers. In general, I believe you've already stated that the largest percentage of industry impacted was tourism. Is that accurate, followed by oil and gas? And that was because of the pandemic and the deflated price for the commodity?
Through the chair, Mr. Kidd, that is absolutely correct. Our largest impact has been in the tourism and lodging sector.
Thank you. And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, if I might, and then we did have some commercial, was the commercial property section impacted at all?
Largely not, actually. There were some initial modifications on some uncertainties that were there, but once that followed through, again, a large amount were initial three-month modifications were put in place at the request of financial institutions. But following that, it really has predominantly been working with the tourism sector as they had longer-term impacts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Okay. This is a B that brings us to item C, item 20-12. So we can either take a break at ease, lunch here.
All right.
So why don't we, we'll work through lunch. I'll take a motion for executive sessions to discuss this confidential employment matters related to Animal Access Project, Mustang Holdings LLC, a stress loan portfolio review of loan participation program, development finance program.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I'd like to motion that we go into executive session to discuss confidential and deliberative matters relating to Amber Access Project, Mustang Holding LLC, and Stress Loan Portfolio Review of Loan Participation Program and Finance Program. This is supported by the Open Meetings Act, AS44.62.310, which allows the board to consider confidential matters in executive session. In this case, the board believes that these are subjects which would have an adverse effect on the finances of ADA or are protected by law due to rules protecting personal privacy and certain business information.
This is Bill Kennedy, I second.
Thank you both. Is there any objection to going into executive session? Seeing none, we will go into executive session and we'll each see that.
Okay, so you want to take like 15 minutes to get up, rather have a lunch and then start?
Is lunch here?
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a 10-minute break before we grab lunch.
Okay, and then we'll start with Amber.
Here you are on the record.
Thank you. I advise the board is not taking any formal action on the matters discussed on the executive session. We are now out of the executive session. And I will go to item number 7, our agenda, director's comments. Alan? Item number 7, public engagement. Ready?
Chairman, board members, we have put together a presentation to update everyone on the public engagement process, the software program, other activities that we've undertaken. This was requested previously, and because of different scheduling requirements, we're unable to give a earlier presentation on this, so we thought we'd take this opportunity for it. I would ask that Colleen Bryan, our communications director, join me, and she's the one that actually put this presentation together.
Welcome, Colleen.
Hi, thanks for having me, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, and to the folks on the line, my name is Colleen Bryan, and I'm the communications director here at ADA, and I'm here with you today to provide a brief update on what we've been up to for different initiatives related to public engagement and communications over the last few months. Happy to either take questions throughout the presentation or wait until the end. I'd like to be respectful of everybody's time here today, so please let me know, Mr. Chair. We can advance to the next slide, please. I've seen the slide a couple of times already, so I won't go over it for the group or for those online either. Just really wanted to make folks aware that we are a public corporation of the state and that our mission is really all about focus on economic development and creating job growth for Alaskans here in Alaska. And the way that we're able to do that is through various forms of financing and investments. Also, when it all boils down, it's really about whether or not our projects have potential to meet those two very important criteria. First of which is to be a good financial investment, and the other is to create those tangible benefits for Alaskans, and that's really where the public engagement and communications pieces really come together. So public engagement is a term that we use to describe really a broad range of methods of communication and tools, but it's the ways in which the public can become more informed and they can participate in ADA activities. So when I talk about improving public engagement, I'm referring to the ways that we share and the ways that we listen to Alaskans. We approach public engagement by identifying really four key elements. You'll see on the slides up on your screen, the first one of which is understanding the audience. Who are the stakeholders that we are looking to reach? What are their priorities? What are their concerns? And what are their values? The second is understanding the message, making sure that we're using clear and consistent language and also visuals to communicate our often complex projects and programs in a way that the audience can really understand. Then the third one is the frequency, how often with which we communicate and the tools with which we choose to communicate with. And that leads into the final one of tools. What are the channels, the methods, the programs, the technology for really getting that message across? Last time I presented before this board was at the August 12, 2021 meeting, and so I thought I would take a moment to do a quick recap of the things we had discussed. At that presentation, it was also accompanied by a resolution, which this board passed unanimously, to really seek support to pursue ways to improve and to modernize the ways in which we engage with the public. We went out for bid in the August through September timeframe. We closed on those solicitations for the end of October. We had four compliant competitive bids, and the successful vendor that was selected is a vendor called Public Input. We started to get them on board in the middle part of November, and we had the first feature of that program that we were able to roll out actually at the December board meeting, which was the text and email notifications that we have recently implemented.
Mr. Chairman, is that company an Alaskan-based company?
No, they are not. This is a nationwide vendor.
Okay. Were there any Alaska-based companies that were bidders?
No, there were not. Mm-hmm. We can advance to the next slide, please. So a little bit about Public Input, which is a great question. Chair Fogel, or Chairmember Fogel, rather. The Public Input is a web-based community engagement platform, and it has over 300 organizations that utilize this project representing 37 different states. It's an incredibly robust platform that's really unique in that it is designed for government-related entities to facilitate public engagement and communications. It's really comprised of three core elements, the first of which is an engagement hub, the second of which is a contact database, and the third is this built-in suite of various communication tools. So a real quick overview of each of those three elements is a few elements of the engagement hub are that it offers the text and email notifications and surveys, as well as has an upload portal for aggregating handwritten survey responses, offers an interactive mapping feature, and also has a really comprehensive public comment organization and management feature of it as well. It also offers online meetings. And so we're all very familiar with the Zoom meetings over the last 2 years. And so going forward, we'll be able to really bridge that online, offline, hybrid kind of meeting engagement that I think people will be looking for as we really fully come out of COVID. The contact database element of it, if you're familiar with products such as Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics, then you'll understand just how important it is to be able to capture contact information and for being able to organize that information across projects and programs so that way people can self-subscribe for what kinds of information that they want to be aware of, and that we'll have a variety of tools to really reach them, whether that's text, emails, notifications, or print mailers. There's a variety of ways that we can reach folks. And then the third element on that communication tool is that there's really no shortage of tools out there. We all have our own preferences, and so we want to be able to meet people where they're at. And we want to be able to provide more opportunities for the public to interact with ADA. And I think through these tools, such as our social media, which I'll go into briefly, this ability to offer text messaging, what you're seeing on the screen right here, which are kind of mini-branded public websites, it's really about having this different functionality across a variety of platforms that all work together. So, for example, Salesforce that I mentioned earlier, Microsoft Dynamics, MailChimp, or Constant Contact, there are all these different individual products that all work great, but what's really outstanding about Public Input is it offers them in this contained ecosystem. So, you know, they're all going to work together, and you don't have as many of those issues of cross-functionality that you might have with if you have these disparate systems that you're trying to get to talk to each other. We'll stay on this slide. Yes, please. So this is an example of the mini-branded project website. It's really just a proof of concept. This is still in the works, but I wanted you to be able to visualize what it is that we're looking to accomplish with it. to be able to track some of our more active projects that have a lot of parts and pieces that are ever evolving, and people obviously have a lot of interest in what these updates are. So the way that it's organized is across the top on that project timeline, you would be able to pass through and see how we got to this point. For example, with 10-02, the bidding lease component of it. Then what are the after tracks? What are the next steps? So it has this really logical workflow across the top to walk you through the project timeline of it. Other elements that you would see. Another kind of website, the ability to have maps and images and videos. Also, links to any hosted events that we might be able to have are all embedded within this one project site. It takes the user to be able to self-register, have a calendar invite, all of that good stuff. So really trying to make it as easy for people as possible in this contained ecosystem. For the board notifications, I'm really glad to hear that we've had such positive feedback from people so far on this element. It was something that we heard from people quite a bit. Our board obviously shared with the Alaska Energy Authority, and so there was a little bit of difficulty for people to know when to call in if they wanted to listen, to make a public comment. And this has provided some real certainty for people who want to make sure that they have an opportunity to listen and to participate. And so this was first rolled out at the December 1st board meeting. And people can self-subscribe for either a text or an email notification, or both if they so choose. And they will be notified at the start of the EDA board meeting, and then when we have returned from the executive session.
If I can add, just to clarify, is that EDA organizationally is the only one that utilizes this software. So there's not push notifications or anything like that that's coming for AEA. Just, you know, for members of the public and for be aware, it's really for EDA to use.
Thank you. Go ahead and the next slide, please. So when we're talking about the next steps for it, obviously there's a lot of functionality that I haven't covered in this brief kind of 10 to 15 minutes, but what we're looking to go ahead and expand with this is to do this full rollout, full adoption, full training and onboarding of this really comprehensive software. And we are a fairly lean team. We are now a team of two, and I'll introduce my latest cohort a little bit later in this presentation. But there's obviously a lot of work that can be done and that we're really excited to be taking on. And it also provides scalability that we've never had before. When you're a lean department, whether you're bringing on contractors or an agency, project partners, when you don't have the ability to scale and bring people in on appropriate permissions-based access, then you're either creating a lot more work for yourself or, again, you have those limitations for scalability. So I'm really excited for the next steps to expand and fully roll out this this software that we've taken on. The next step is not related to our public engagement software, but I did want to briefly touch on our social media presence. This is for LinkedIn. We've had LinkedIn for a little under a year, and we currently have just over 300 followers. This is just a quick snapshot of some of the data that we're able to track and have insight onto for our page visitors, for our followers. If anyone's spent a lot of time on LinkedIn, I apologize, this is going to be old news to you, but I thought it would be of interest to our board and for folks on the line. This particular graphic shows the page views, so this is visitors to our LinkedIn page over a course of the last approximately year. So we're able to see when there's certain spikes, certain trends, and whether they're accessing it from a desktop or from a mobile device. And why that's so interesting is because we're able to track engagements as well, like likes, comments, shares, impressions, which are just the unique eyeballs that are looking at content, whether or not they clicked on anything, and whether or not a particular post led them to then follow the page. So you really get a lot of insight that helps us in our decision-making process to make sure that our content is reaching the appropriate audiences. One other snapshot that I just wanted to go ahead and share is that this graphic shows us the people who are looking at the information on the EDA website. And I just wanted to point out that this aligns pretty strongly with the sectors that we work with on a regular basis. So of these top 10 industries of people that are viewing and engaging with our content, it's high representation from the financial services sector, oil and gas, as well as renewable environmental, and then the government administration and so forth. The reason why I wanted to point these out is because it's constantly evolving. We are always learning. We want to be understanding what our audience is interested in and to make sure that we're able to provide information that is relevant and meaningful to them. And so being able to have access to data like this, we can make those data-driven decisions and make sure that we're reaching the appropriate audiences. I think I've got one more slide up on here. And this is just a little bit of a teaser that I wanted to put out. If you've been to the AVA website, there's some great things about it, and there's some areas for improvement, as I like to call it. Part of that is improving the... Would you disagree or approve? So some of those areas of improvement are an overall aesthetic, also making sure we have up-to-date content. That content lives in places that people think it should be living in, so logical navigability and really improving the user experience. We have a very content-heavy, data-heavy website, but it's not necessarily super intuitively organized. And so really taking that to heart and making sure that we have a good experience, not just for prospective project partners or potential borrowers, but also prospective future candidates for working at AVA. We want to make sure that they're able to find the information that they're looking for and get a good feel of what we are about as an organization and so forth. So I hope that in this short presentation that one of the takeaways that you'll have is just really our commitment as a team, that we've really taken it to heart that we want to improve the modernization, the accessibility, and the engagement for AVA's projects and programs with Alaskans at large. I would like to introduce, as I mentioned earlier, we have expanded our communications team to a communications team of two. I'm not sure if she's in the room right now. Her name is Kyla Stewart. She joined us about 4 months ago in the communications and engagement specialist role. So it's a brand new role to AVA. And what we're able to do with her experience on board is to have that horsepower and to grow our team. All of these materials are built in-house. We don't have an agency support. So every graphic you see, every presentation, the annual report this year, our social media, we're doing it all in-house. So being able to have her on board really allows us to expand and help do good things for AVA and Alaskans. So thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Colleen and Alan, for getting us some improvement to our technology for communications. I very much appreciate that, and it's a great first step. When, you know, AEA has put together a very nice annual report now for 2 years. Just wondering when ours will be ready and complete.
AVA's has been completed. We have hard copies if you are interested in seeing a physical one, and we did submit the electronic one related to January 10th deadline. This was submitted on time.
To the chair, Member Fogelson, I actually highlighted and commend Colleen and Kyla has been the ones that actually in-house prepared the annual report.
Okay. So I was remotely that day, so I probably wasn't paying attention, but... Yeah, I'll go back and look at it. So thank you. But to further my comments, I'm wondering, I think when you last presented to the board, Colleen, you said you were going to do more community engagement, potentially looking at like a publishing or publicist or advertising company to help you with outreach into the community. And so I'm just wondering what we're going to be doing besides LinkedIn and press releases for community engagement, because I believe that we're doing things that are very important for Alaska and for Alaska's sovereignty and resource development and economic development in Alaska. And I don't think that the everyday Alaskan is hearing our story. And if our press releases don't get picked up, then our message stops there. So I'm wondering how we're, besides going to the chambers and doing a presentation, besides press releases, what are we doing to get out into the community to sing the song of AVA?
I think that's a really good point. Alaska is obviously a really big state, but we have quite just a handful of media outlets. And if you're not getting picked up by the three approximately real online and broadcast media outlets, well, then your message really isn't going to be picked up. So I appreciate you identifying that limitation. That's one of the things where I think that the website is also going to be a great resource so that we can have a consistent presence and a consistent narrative about our projects and programs. But the in-person element of it, in 2020 alone, we had over 40 public engagement interactions, whether that did include chambers, that did include assemblies, but it also included various professional industries speaking at luncheons and breakfasts and for REC, for example, the Alliance. There's a lot of really great advocacy and trade groups out there that were interested in hearing what was going on with ADA programs and projects, and we were able to reach their membership, which is obviously a huge asset for advocating on behalf of ADA's projects. More specifically, I would look to our project partners, for example, the Matthew Borough, when we're talking about what's in those really collaborative efforts for Amber Access Project. We have a team of consultants and contractors that we work closely with to be out in the communities because they do need to be hearing it firsthand from us as the project leads on those. So those are examples of more collaborative, broader reaching efforts, but I would certainly be open if you had specific ideas for areas of improvement in that area.
Well, I would get in contact with probably Blueprint Alaska and have them come up with a marketing plan for us.
That's something we can discuss. I would recommend a competitive procurement process for any kind of additional consultation.
That's an example of a company that I just don't think we're doing enough. You're doing a lot. Don't want to diminish any of the work that you're doing. But I think we need to really up our game because there's a great story to tell about ADA, and I don't think the vast majority of Alaskans know who we are.
I appreciate your comment, and I agree that ADA is doing some really important work, especially looking at just a handful of projects, the 10-02 leases that we hold, the Amber Access Project. These are life-changing generational projects that could swing one way or the other, and so it is crucial to make sure that Alaskans at large are aware of the benefits of them, but also ADA's involvement in them. So I appreciate that comment, and we'll develop a plan going forward.
Colleen, I just wanted to make a comment that this is really good work, and this is all with the internal resources. That is absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Well, I'll make the comment to gain improvement. Appreciate that. As long as we have the collaborative efforts, on projects like questions and especially during the next 30 days down the road, make sure we do that. Okay?
Well, again, I want to thank Colleen for joining us and doing the presentation and commend her and her team on the work that you've been really undertaking. It's oxygen recognized, but there's a lot more that we need to do. But really appreciate your time on this. One other thing I would point out, we'll get to in director comments about project fact sheets. There's another thing that Colleen and Kyle is spending a lot of time on is changing the it's not just the appearance or the format, it's just the way that we're able to deliver information. When if you look at the comparative of the way it was done before and kind of an Excel spreadsheet versus I would think it was a fairly cumbersome, fact sheet in and of itself, that alone is a way of ultimately getting to the point of really engaging and communicating with people and having resources there, and that's been a key focus. The website is obviously needs attention. We need to get to that. That is our principal point of communication. We're going to be working on that.
Colleen, I just have one quick question about, I know when you presented with us before, I got really excited about, I can't remember what the verbiage was we were using, but where you were going to detail the way you communicated to make it more specific to the community's needs.
So, for instance, if folks didn't have good internet access, that we were going to take a look at other ways that we could communicate some of the information, perhaps to more rural communities, or just depending on what the need was. And so I was just wondering if you could report out a little bit on that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think a great example of that is the collaboration through the Amber Access Project, for example, where there is a real need to communicate with our rural and remote communities. So I think perhaps one of the examples you're referring to is, you know, high-speed internet is not acceptable in all of those areas. And so how do we make sure that we can reach audiences and reach communities where that might be a barrier and these digital approaches are not as effective? So what we did is, working with our consultant group, has prepared mailers as well as the in-person presentations and meetings, digital is great, but there's really true replacement for face-to-face interaction. And so we had folks on our team that went out to Alatna, Alicacket are a couple of the places along the proposed AAP access route to have those in-person conversations. So I would love to give them a shout out for the great work that they did in preparing those materials and going on site. But again, it's part of that collaborative effort in making sure that you understand the audience and that you are engaging with them appropriately. Having a website is great, and we also made significant improvements to the Amber Access Project website. But again, reaching people where they're at and to be in person in those communities.
What I would add is that the road development itself is a solution to that very particular problem about high-speed internet data access. Part of the permit that we have in place that is with the Record of Decision is through the right-of-way grants that we have with the BLM and National Park Service, is for utilization by those local communities of the fiber optic capacity, which is already permitted with road development.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Next one. Thank you, Paul.
So the next on agenda is 7B, which is a review from the ADA side on the cash management. We really wanted to give an opportunity for our Chief Financial Officer, Donna Keppers, to really identify all the work that her team and the shared services have been doing, what they have been facilitating in cash flows, vendor payments, other elements, and dealing with really with the COVID-19 impact, which was a key driver ultimately behind this information. But I also am very much aware with your time that you've received most of the intel, most presentation on this through the AEA board meeting.
Thank you for these 2 minutes again to address you this afternoon. For the record, my name is Donna Keppers. I'm CFO for ADA and AEA, and I came on board about 10 months ago, and one of my first 30 to 60 days was actually taking a look back at gathering an understanding of what financial services and what shared services does. And so there's a lot of exercises that we've done as far as look back, to look at what kind of activity has taken place over the last 3 years, 5 years. Just with the COVID pandemic here that was in the middle of all of that, we had to look back a little further so that I could understand trends, look at performance, to look at volume statistics. And then one of these, this one I thought that was fairly important, dealt with the cash movement that we generated FY20, FY21, and then for the first 6 months of this fiscal year. And so we did look at this little sheet earlier today, and one of the things that we want to focus this afternoon on is the top sheet, is the top line dealing with FY21 and the impact of AK Cares. And what you will see is for AEA, it's volume, but as AK Cares distributions were entered into the fiscal year, you know, our payables activity and volume rose by over 50%. And, you know, it's like this speech spoke very highly to me about the caliber and dedication of staff that we have and being part of the solution distributing grant money to the entire economy. You know, this was a compressed time period for that program, and we've had limited staff and resources, stood up a portal. Oh, my gosh, what I've been able to see of what a handful of people have done, it's absolutely amazing. And so when you look at the statistics here, you look at the $96 million, you know, that was moved through AK Cares in FY21. and how that information relates to the other slide that was presented earlier today that had the map in the districts of where money was distributed, and of course the industries that were impacted throughout our state. Our $96 million in distributions is made up of the grant applications processed by DCCED and ADA. So in that $282 million, our $96 million is embedded in that component of that. But I will say that as we've gone through this entire look-back process on the pandemic and our impact on our economy, it's astounding to see. And I think it was important to share the $200 million that we put into the Alaskan economy in a very short period of time to help us take a step forward and just to remain afloat.
And if I could add, I just want to highlight that we're really proud of our staff with the focus on the mission.
The mission.
Looking at the impact that it was to the small businesses, the putting on stress within the organization because of these increased flows and handling, the entire processing with the grants themselves and the operators that we had in place and working with TCCED and their support certainly was great along the way. It really just gets to the point of the mission focus of staff here, dedication ultimately to Alaskans, and being able to communicate that more broadly. I think we fully take the input on the communications that we need to show. Hopefully this gets to a bit of it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're so welcome.
So following on, Chairman, Board Members, we have the Loan Dashboard Report, which is a monthly report that we provide, available also for review by the public, of the outstanding balances, the way that breaks down under our different loan programs. So this is specifically focused on a loan participation program with some additional power project loans being included in the first page, so page 1 of 12 on the dashboard report, showing that at the end of the current month, which is measured as of January 31st, so we'll be reporting and receiving an update for February by March 15th, so that'll be available in the April board meeting. But having a balance here of about $420 million under the loan participation program, and then and as a total, $423 million, including the power project loans. And then we have additional amounts that come in through our direct loan program, which is we refer generally as our development finance program. And that would be the loans that we have directly to parties like Blue Crest, X LLC, those parties.
Alan, could you remind me, at the end of 2021, what was our revolving fund balance?
So at the end of 2021, we said revolving fund balance. Are you asking the balance that was in our loan portfolio or
board report?
Okay, so our revolving fund is our total fund. That actually accommodates loan participation program, all of our other programs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look specifically at the loan participation program, it's what's shown on the dashboard report being the starting balance at $454 million.
Uh-huh.
So that was the balance that we had at the end of the last fiscal year, being June
30, 2021. Okay. I'm asking for the end of the month in 2021.
Oh, the December imperative month?
Yeah, month over month is what I'm looking for. No. What I'm trying to find out here is, we discussed this a little bit at the Budget and Audit Subcommittee. Is our loans portfolio growing, or is it contracting?
If you compare it to last month, it has reduced. And mm-hmm. I think what we were highlighting in the January meeting that had been mentioned is that there were several, well, there was one very large specific loan that had been repaid.
Okay.
So that had reduced it. But in general, what we've been seeing is month-to-month growth in the loan participation program.
Okay. If you don't mind sending the BAS committee members again, just the year-over-year starting and ending balance for, say, the last 5 years, because I seem to recall when I looked at the data before our meeting in January that I think our loan participation balance was actually decreasing and not increasing. So I just want to confirm that.
Certainly. I mean, what I can tell you, again, with on the annual numbers, right, looking at fiscal year, but this would be measured as of our June 30 fiscal year end.
Mm-hmm.
Since that's our annual reporting, the same lines that the state reports its financial information, that for the ending balance of in fiscal year 2016, as a comparative, right, was $333.2 million in our participation program. That has increased annually since then to a year-end balance in fiscal year 2021 to $445.3 million.
Okay.
So what you're seeing within the last, well, this in this case would be the 8 months, right, since that June 30 year end, so from July ultimately to this report ultimately for January, so 7 months, that's reduced now to $420 million, but there was a very significant balance that was repaid. It's a large office building. Ultimately,
as you recall, when we talked last, that there were several loans that were in the pipeline to replace that.
There were not to replace the full balance, because in total the repayments were close to $18 million, but there were upwards of $8 to $9 million of new loans that were coming on.
Okay. So then, is it fair to say that for the time period of July 1st to the end of January that because of that large payoff, we're seeing a reduction in our portfolio
of loans? That's sort of fair to say.
Okay.
And we had been anticipating, and also with the information I did share, we had been anticipating, you know, between budgeting, between $60 to $65 million in fundings for the loan participation program. So on a net basis with those larger payoffs, we're not going to get to that level.
How much in loans have we written since July 1st?
I would have to follow up with information for you on that. I don't have that directly at hand.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to share for the budget subcommittee as well as the public, when we think about those numbers, which we should be evaluating, looking at trends, we also need to recognize that we're looking towards economic recovery and that the cash available either in the form of grants or loans from the federal government or other agencies were fairly significant over the last 24 months. And so this, too, in addition to loan modifications, has affected our bottom line as an organization. So I absolutely think it's right on to look at that. But we just need to make sure that we remember there was other money and other opportunity out there that may have been a borrower's choice to go after versus where they might have typically come to ADA for a loan in the past. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up, we actually have that information, Mr. Fogle. It's on the report. So the number where we show new loans funded, that is from July 1st to January 31st. This is on page 1 of 12. So the in loan participation program, the $11.6 million is the total. There's a lot of activity ultimately that comes with the first, you know, the quarter now and ultimately before year end.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Chair, Board members, the next item on the director's comments ultimately is our fact sheets. This is what we're referring to as our development project finance report. So this is an aggregation of the fact sheets that we prepare on individual projects. And this is what I'm highlighting. It's just the visual change, the aggregation of the information that's on it. I think is more accessible to the public in understanding the projects that we're currently managing, what ADA has invested in. And then, following that, unless there's any questions on the project fact sheets, we have updated project fact sheets, just so everyone's aware, with SST line investment that had not been included in the fact sheets prior, even though that transaction was closed in early 2021. The little benefit ultimately of that SST line is ensuring that there's a stabilized rate base supporting AEA and the work they do on Bradley Lake. So then under 7E, the pre-development projects quarterly report, this is in a new format, which I think is a little more readable, is the information that the board has requested for the specific projects that we have in pre-development. Now currently, that is the Ambler Access Project, the West of Sitna Access Road, and we will be adding to this, to the extent we're progressing on it, the military facilities on land development up in Fairbanks, North Pole. So those are our pre-development work at this point in time. Defining out funding that the board has approved through resolutions and giving a full information to yourselves and the public about where we stand on the amounts that have been allocated and approved by the board.
How's the public outreach on what you said along with the borough?
There was a meeting that was on February 23rd that was organized by the Massachusetts Borough as one of the first three engaging on that. We had representation from ADA participating in that with the Massachusetts Borough staff by Desi Peterson, the project manager for the Western Access Road. So that day there were three distinct times of engagement with the public. As far as the feedback I've heard from all parties is that there was a robust engagement, questions being asked about the road, information being shared. The questions ultimately really being addressed by Jesse to the extent that we're afraid.
I listened in. I thought it went well.
Okay. And then item 7F is really highlighting the fact that the next board meeting for ADA is going to occur on Wednesday, April 13th.
Thank you. Brings us to item number 8, board comments. Any board comments?
I have a board comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Happy to be here. Appreciate the professionalism. Looking forward to working with each and every one of you. And staff as well.
I would ask staff to once you have it, that Randy's information, telephone number, cell number, and email for all the board members to have. Please, please, I'd like to have it.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to commend Alan and his staff for the great work that you're doing here at ADA, especially with the federal government coming in and trying to supersede states' rights. And I just appreciate the job that you're doing in fighting back against that, and to your staff as well that's helping support you.
Well, not too into the comments. I'll take a motion for Mr. Kenday to become vice chair.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I'd like to motion that Bill Kendig become the vice chair of the ADA board.
Any second?
Second.
Thank you. Any opposed? Mr. Kendig being vice chair? None. And I will also appoint Mr. Bill Moore to the budget audit for ADA. Albert's stewardship. Welcome, Bill. Congratulations, Sandy.
Thank you.
Further board